Hello, it's Friday, 6th of November. I'm Hannah Pearson from Per Anderson.
And I'm Gary Bauerman from Check In Asia.
And this is episode 8 of the Friday Rewind.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in to the 8th instalment of the Friday Rewind show.
Over the next 15 minutes, we'll zoom through 5 top talking points in Southeast Asian travel from the past 7 days. So what's up first, Gary?
So our first story this week, Hannah, is the Hungarian foreign minister who tested positive for COVID-19 during a trip to Southeast Asia this week. Now, this is one of those stories, Hannah, that doesn't really surprise us anymore, and yet still it's a little bit shocking, isn't it, really?
No, it is. You know, the fact that a government minister managed to come in positive for COVID, and he met the prime minister. He'd arrived into Cambodia, essentially, and it was only when he then flew to Thailand that Thailand then picked up, he was tested, and they picked up that he was COVID-19 positive. But whilst he was in Cambodia, you know, he'd met the prime minister, Hun Sen. They'd been shaking hands with one another. They hadn't really been socially distancing themselves from one another. So the Cambodian prime minister has now had to go into quarantine.
Yeah, and apparently 628 people, they've done a track and trace, 628 people that were in or around the palace or the meetings that took place have been tested and will have to isolate for 14 days, including, as you said there, the prime minister. So what happened then, as you mentioned, Hannah, is that the Hungarian foreign minister, who was in Cambodia for one day, to sign a bunch of agreements, mostly based on agricultural trade and agribusiness, then moved on and flew to Bangkok, as you said. But he arrived there at 6:30 p.m. and wasn't tested until 9 p.m. So we don't know, actually. It's still very unclear about when he became positive. And was he tested in Cambodia? I mean, there are rumors on social media that the Hungarians and the Cambodians decided they didn't want to have any testing. They didn't want, as you said, they didn't want social distancing or masks in the photo calls that they had. But this is a really disturbing story, really, because the Hungarian government had already, one private plane was there to take the foreign minister and his entourage back. They had to send another plane. So the foreign minister was alone on his plane, obviously with the crew, and the rest of the entourage went on a separate plane. But, you know, 8 months into the pandemic, you're just surprised that this is happening.
Yeah, and, you know, especially when it comes to Thailand, this is not going to help reassure travellers or even the government about reopening borders, is it? If even a government official can arrive positive for COVID, and presumably they would have access to all of these tests and everything else, you know, what hope does the kind of average traveller have of coming in? And I think it certainly doesn't help this growing perception of Europe as being a kind of dangerous destination in terms of COVID.
Was it a few months ago we had that Egyptian military delegation, so VIPs also coming in, and that caused a bit of a stir, didn't it, when one of those members of that delegation tested positive and was actually free to wander around parts of Thailand. So yeah, you're right. I mean, the nervousness is going to increase after this.
So should we move to another country? Where should we go?
Let's go to the Philippines, and unfortunately we have another COVID-19 story, but this is a bit more of a positive spin, isn't it?
It is. I think it's a positive step in the right direction anyhow. So essentially, an executive order has now been signed to make sure that COVID-19 testing kits, both RT-PCR and antigen, are going to be regulated in terms of the pricing. Now, you might be wondering why we are talking about this with relation to travel, but actually in the Philippines, it's really crucial because nearly all destinations, even domestic ones, require a test upon arrival, and especially Boracay, where you need an RT-PCR test to get in. And a lot of the local tourism businesses have been saying that this is a major blocker to tourists being able to arrive onto the island, because the prices range anything from 3,500 pesos to 8,000 pesos. So they're tricky to get. So hopefully by setting this ceiling on the testing rates, it should encourage domestic tourism.
Yeah, as you mentioned there, Hannah, there's an executive order, number 118, which will authorize the Department of Health and the Department of Trade and Industry, as you said, to set a price ceiling for COVID-19 test kits. And that is a positive spin. The Philippines, as we know, has started to bring down its seven-day rate a little bit. There has been progress there. It's closing in on 400,000 cumulative cases. And yesterday, of course, it was one of eight countries which was listed by China, from which nationals are not going to be permitted to enter China anymore. The other seven were Belgium, France, India, Russia, Bangladesh, Ukraine, and the UK. So the Philippines was the only country from Southeast Asia on that list. So getting testing absolutely right and accurate and verified, and as you say, you know, getting the price down so that people can travel again is going to be very, very important.
Definitely. That's interesting that they haven't included Indonesia, China on that list, isn't it? Who have actually got the most cases in Southeast Asia.
It's quite remarkable. And when you look at that list, like I said, you mean the UK and Belgium and France, you can understand that. India, perhaps, Russia too, Bangladesh also, Ukraine as well. But Philippines, yeah, it was the only country from Southeast Asia, the only country from Asia. It's interesting. Indonesia hasn't yet been included, but you know, China has said that this list may increase. And these are temporary measures, it's saying. So
sure,
we'll watch that closely.
I wonder if it's in retaliation, because I think last week the Philippines sent home 2,000 Chinese nationals for overstaying. I wonder if that had anything to do with it.
Every possibility.
So we were just talking about Indonesia. So should we talk a little bit more about that? And it's a pretty positive story, isn't it?
It's a positive story. So we're looking at the flight data, which was announced for October. We've seen some uplifts. Obviously, we had the public holiday last weekend, which encouraged people to travel. There was also some stimulus measures which were introduced to enable airlines to reduce the fares to make air travel a little bit more competitive. But it seems to have worked, doesn't it? Across the month, we've seen a percentage rise, which is quite impressive. And you know, domestic travel, again, both for leisure and for business purposes, obviously is very, very important to the economy. And October looks so it was a positive month.
Yeah, so Angkasa Pura One, which is the kind of government-owned company, which owns, I think, 14 of the airports within Indonesia. So it's airports like Yogyakarta, like Bali, like Surabaya. They saw a 16.9% month-on-month increase in October, which is a pretty impressive increase, you know, given the current situation.
Yeah, it is. And You said that they aggregated that data from 13 airports. It's a decent uplift from September. It's a huge uplift from months earlier in the year. So, you know, it looks as though the curve is moving upwards. But, you know, again, how much of that is down to, you know, a holiday month, the discounted pricing? Can that endure over the coming months?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely a huge amount is due to this long weekend. So they had 453,500 pax who flew in the final week of October. So, I mean, that's almost what a quarter of that 2.16 million. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see, like you say, how will that carry on in November when there aren't so many public holidays?
Yeah, I mean, Indonesia this week also slipped into its first official recession for two decades, I think. I picked up another interesting story about during the holidays last weekend with some quite remarkable data. This was published in the Jakarta Post, and it was looking at the rate of compliance with social distancing and mask wearing during the holidays. And it said that the compliance was generally high, but actually came out with some quite specific figures. According to the data, on October the 24th, the rate of compliance of mask wearing policy during tourist spots overall is 89.09%, but this did drop to 86.35% on October the 31st. Now, how do you collate those specific figures?
I don't know. It must just be people. And they're just looking. They've got people assigned at every tourist site making little tallies. Yes, they're wearing a mask. No, these guys aren't. And I think that doesn't bode particularly well for, you know, the prospect of an uptick in cases. So of course, just before this long weekend, their COVID-19 task force had really mixed messages. You know, they were warning, they were telling the public basically to stay at home, whilst at the same time the government were lowering the passenger service charges and everything else. So it was very mixed messages. But one of the messages that the COVID-19 task force did have was that in the previous long weekends, they saw a big uptick in cases. I think it's something like 30%, possibly more. So yeah, I think it will be in 2 weeks' time, one to watch whether this has really had a big impact on you know, the second wave of cases in Indonesia.
Yeah, that dreaded time lag from mass travel events is something we've become used to during the year. And as you say, you know, Indonesia doesn't need another spike. It's struggling to control the cases it already has, and another spike would just damage the economy even further.
Definitely. So, moving on.
Let's move on slightly out of bounds. We're going out of Southeast Asia this time to South Korea. And this week, this is a sort of tourism promotional story, and it's an upbeat story. So in Seoul this week, the ASEAN Korea Center held a ceremony to launch the ASEAN Culture and Tourism Pavilion. Now this tends to happen every year. The ASEAN Korea Center is an intergovernmental organization between South Korea and the 10 Southeast Asian countries. It was established in 2009. And each year they hold this tourism and culture and cuisine festival to promote travel into Southeast Asia from South Korea. Now, South Korea is, as we know, as we've discussed many times on the pod, Hannah, it's an important inbound market for Southeast Asian countries. It's also a popular destination for Southeast Asian travelers, or it was up until the end of 2019. And official figures from the ASEAN Korea Center said this week that 10 million Koreans traveled into Southeast Asia last year, which is that's a sizable number.
Definitely, yeah. So, I mean, this pavilion is doing things that it's kind of nice, actually, because they're talking about providing South Koreans with a chance to experience nostalgia, they said, and the simulation of travel around Southeast Asia. So including colours and sounds and even scent. I'm not quite sure how they're going to do the scent part, but that was the part that caught my imagination, I think.
Yeah, there's photo exhibitions, there's a book launch, there's cooking programmes. That's perhaps where the scent comes from, I'm not sure. But yeah, it's a 22-day showcase. It combines culture and tourism, and as we said, their cuisines. And it's the kind of thing that ordinarily we probably wouldn't pay much attention to, but because, you know, the year that it's been and the nature of tourism promotions hasn't really happened in person, most things have been virtual. The fact that this is actually happening, in that people can attend physically, is a positive thing. One of the attendees, the opening was attended by the ambassadors of Vietnam and Singapore. And obviously there was a K-pop star there as well, Kim Jun-soo. Obviously, K-pop culture and music is pretty popular here in the region. It really helps generate flows of tourism to South Korea. So, yeah, I mean, these kinds of things, as I said there, we probably wouldn't pay too much attention to it normally, but we need as much as we can get right now.
Definitely. And so shall we end on a high note?
Let's end on a high note. Let's end on a musical note.
Yeah, on a musical note. So our last story for the week is in Cambodia. So four expats who have been in Phnom Penh kind of came together and created this idea of filming a video, a music video, but two of them were DJing in the back of a tuk-tuk as they were driving around Phnom Penh.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I've been watching this all morning, Hannah. It's a one-hour mix. I've got friends who are DJs who have been doing mixes during lockdowns from their bars or from their front rooms or whatever, just try and keep their talents going, their skills going, but also to keep their profiles up. But these guys have actually done it in quite an interesting way. They've done it in the back of a tuk-tuk, as you mentioned. They're actually mixing as they go around the city. And it shows off Phnom Penh at night. It's a great showcase. And then you have the two people filming this on a motorbike as well. There's also a GoPro, which I think is probably on the back of the tuk-tuk driver's head. And it's an interesting way to promote Phnom Penh. I mean, if you had a tourism board get hold of this, they would probably glam this up completely and they would overproduce it. But this has that sort of documentary feel. It has that musician feel. It's nicely done. There are a few little blips along the way, and it doesn't really filter out any elements that perhaps the tourism board wouldn't want you to see. It's very much about driving around the streets at night, doing a music blog, which is absolutely brilliant. And I've actually worked on live music and on the road video shoots before, and they are extremely difficult to do. So although this is a 1 hour mix, I don't know how much footage they had to put together or if they had to do it over a number of nights, but congratulations to these guys. It's absolutely brilliant. We'll put the link up on our show notes, because it is well worth having a look at, whether you like the house music or not. This is a great way to showcase Phnom Penh. And I like this kind of creative way of bringing together music and culture and places. Let's hope we see more of that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they were talking about a helicopter next, so I would love to see where they go with this.
This one is very real. It's very street level, and I love that. It's absolutely great. You see other tuk-tuks driving by. You see them stuck in traffic jams. You know, the ordinary things that you see on the streets of Phnom Penh. I think it's absolutely brilliant.
Well, that brings us to the end of this week's edition of the Friday Rewind. We'll be back with our usual midweek edition of the podcast next week, and the Friday Rewind will return in 2 weeks.
Yeah, in the meantime, you can catch up with all of our previous editions of the Friday Rewind and the Southeast Asia Travel Show on our website, www.theseasiatravelshow.com, or you can find us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Podchaser, or Stitcher. Just search for the Southeast Asia Travel Show on any of those pod apps.
So that's a wrap for edition 8 of the Friday Rewind. And we look forward to talking Southeast Asian travel and tourism again with you very soon.
Yeah, back to the music.